Hey everyone, welcome back to the Living for Food Pod. It's been a minute. I know I haven't been super consistent, but that's just because of hectic schedules and trying to get some great guests for you. So, the next few weeks, I have quite a few episodes, and I'm gonna do my best to try to get them out back to back to back so that you have so many things to listen to ahead of the summertime. This episode is particularly special because Alfredo Garcia's, aka Fredsters on social media, his cookbook is out today. That's right, today. So we shot this about 2 weeks ago, and now his cookbook is officially out. And I will link it on my Amazon storefront as I usually do. Alfredo was super fun to chat with. We chatted about his food background, talked about his favorite recipes, talked about that time he was even a private chef for an MLB player. We got into some good stuff. So please enjoy this episode as much as I did. And yeah, got a lot coming your way. So please join me in welcoming the lovely Alfredo Garcia. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm really excited and welcome to the Living for Food Pod.
Thanks for having me.
I was looking through your recipes and I haven't eaten lunch yet, so I'm starving
That's a problem.
now. Yeah, I'm like, I don't know why I keep doing that to
Yeah.
myself. I couldn't find too much info on you,
Okay.
so I'm excited to kind of dive into your background and learn more of your story live.
Totally. Yeah. Ask away.
All right, perfect. So I love to start about your background. I
Okay.
know you were born in Rio Grande Valley, which is technically South Texas. Then you grew up in Chicago. At what age did you grow up in Chicago?
Yeah, so I was born in Texas in the Rio Grande Valley, which is like 5 minutes away from Mexico, like
Okay.
super close, like next door neighbors. When I was born, I don't know how old, like I never asked my parents, but I'm assuming it was when I was still a baby. They moved full time to Chicago because my dad always worked
Oh,
over
okay.
there in the summers, like with his dad in construction. So they're like, oh, we have a kid now, like let's go full time and like just work full time over there. So I was there for like 25 years,
Oh,
like
wow.
basically my whole childhood, like young adulthood.
Did you go to college there as well?
Yeah, I went to Northern Illinois University, which is like an hour and a half, 2 hours outside of Chicago.
Okay.
So elementary school, middle school, high school, college, everything Chicago.
Okay, amazing. Yeah, and we'll get into that your later in life a little bit more, but I was reading in an interview that most of your love of cooking came from your mom
Yeah.
and you watched Food Network religiously, as we all probably do. Tell me what meals you watch her make and what you grew up eating.
I think because my mom was for the longest, she was a stay-at-home mom, like when me and my brother were in school. So she was always home cooking for us. Like immediately when we got home from school, like she would start making us like lunch or dinner. And on the weekends, we would always hang out like in the kitchen, like all of us just like making breakfast. Pretty much everything that she would make, like I was always there. Like she was in the kitchen, I was sitting on the dinner table next to the kitchen, like watching her cook and watching Food Network at the same time.
Oh.
It was like just always observing all of that and like everything that she would make. And then like the holidays, like my whole family likes to cook, not to like the extent that I've taken it, but like everyone enjoys cooking.
That's rare.
Yeah, so like instead of like hanging out with my cousins, like usually I would be hanging out in the kitchen, like watching everyone cook and helping them and stuff like that.
Okay, so they gave you tasks to help them. You
Yeah,
weren't just
pretty
sort of.
much.
Okay. Yeah, because I know some people, aka me, I get a little uptight in the kitchen. So I'm like, don't touch anything. Don't help me. I get it. So what kind of dishes was she making when you were growing up?
I mean, all the basics, like chiles rellenos, which I have a recipe in the cook for. Like all the different like caldos, flautas, like carne guisada, like all the staples, like salsa verde, like nothing crazy. Like she didn't, I think the most American thing she would do would probably be like spaghetti or hamburgers and hot dogs, like
the classics.
Yeah, besides that, everything else is like as Mexican as you can get.
And you're first generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So is your dad Mexican as well?
Yeah, both my parents were born in Mexico.
Were you, when you were growing up, did you ever go back and visit Mexico? Yeah,
during most of our childhood, we would go back to Texas like at least a month during the holidays, half of December, half of January. And because Mexico was so close, like we would literally go back and forth from Mexico, like my parents' hometown. Their hometowns in Mexico are like an hour away from the border. So it's like you don't have to go deep into Mexico. It's like literal tiny towns with like 400, 500 people as a population, like super tiny. So yeah, growing up, we went all the time during the holidays.
That's amazing. I would just drive over, get some ingredients and pop back.
Yeah, now it's like a lot more time consuming and like the lines to cross over like super long, but
yeah, I'm sure.
It was fun back in the day.
Yeah, I believe that. Were you always obviously you were intrigued by cooking early on, but did you know that that was the path that you wanted to take?
For the longest, no. I think once I was in college and like I had more of a brain of like, when I went to college, I still had no idea what I wanted to major in. Like I went in undecided. When I had like the first 2 years I lived on campus, the second 2 years I lived in an apartment. So when I got that first apartment, that's when I really started cooking more daily and like cooking for my friends and just like enjoying cooking more. And that's kind of when I started, in my mind, I was like, oh, like I want to cook for a living. Like, I don't know if it's like in a restaurant or like on TV or something, but like I knew I wanted to do something or wanted to work in food full time. I just never knew how it would happen. During college is when I was like, I want to do this forever.
I'm sure you were the friend that everyone went to for snacks and all that good stuff.
Pretty much. Cooking.
Mm-hmm. What were you cooking up in college? Was it Mexican-American recipes as well?
It was a little bit of everything. I always like basically cooked everything for like me and my roommate. For bigger events, I was very involved on campus with events and stuff like that. And I know the only thing that pops up to me is like, two different things are like our summer meetings. Like I cooked for everyone in our organization, which it was like the board members. So it was only like 10 of us, but then
that's still a lot of people though.
Yeah. And then we kind of spearheaded a thing where like we made dinner for all of the community advisors or the RAs, whatever you would call them. Like, so I basically spearheaded that, made the shopping list. Like we made them steaks and like potato and like we made dessert.
Oh, wow.
We did everything for like, I want to say it was like close to like 25 or 30 people.
Wow. So you loved, almost catering, but for like free.
Yeah. It was pretty much catering for like all of these people. And I loved it. So I always enjoyed cooking for like, not just me, but for like everyone.
For everyone else. Yeah. So after college, did you get any formal training after that?
No, I always considered going to culinary school or going that direction, but it's so expensive.
Yeah.
And because I grew up watching Food Network, like I always saw these people. I didn't go to culinary school. Like I just like, it's all self-taught. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, like maybe I don't have to go to culinary school to like be a good cook. You just need to like, the more you do it, the better you get at it.
Right.
So after college, I was kind of being a personal chef for a baseball player who was friends with my cousin. And I did that for about 2 years where like I would go to where he was working, where he was playing at the time.
Oh, okay.
And I would like basically meal prep for him, make breakfast, lunch, or dinner, depending what time the games were. So I did that for like 2 years. And there I learned a lot more about cooking, where like things that I normally didn't cooking, like a lobster tail or like cooking with sweet potatoes or making different rices and stuff like that. So I think that kind of was like my culinary school, like cooking for someone that was like a little more, not like, or I guess like bougie, like they liked the better foods. So I think that was my culinary school, like doing the personal chef thing for a couple years.
Right, right. It's putting it into real life practice as like
exactly.
a professional gig. Are you able to say who that was?
Yeah, he played for the St. Louis Cardinals when I started. His name was Jaime Garcia.
Oh, cool.
So he was with them and then the Atlanta Braves. And then when I stopped working with him is when he was towards the end of his career before he retired. And he was going between like the Chicago Cubs and the New York Yankees. That's when he was like traveling more and like he didn't really have a house or a kitchen or whatnot.
Okay. So you were kind of going with him. I do have a question for you because my first crush ever was Derek Jeter. Did you ever meet him?
that was after my time. I wasn't with him when he was with the Yankees. But with the Yankees, I think he was only with them for maybe like half of a season or something like that.
Okay, okay. I had to ask because I was like, he is it for me.
I never met him.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm a very Yankee. I'm from Connecticut, so we're a Yankee household for sure.
Yeah.
Were you building out your client list at the time or you were just working with...
At the time when I was with him, I started Fretsters. So I initially was like, that's when blogs were very big and like everyone was doing food blogs. So I was like, let me do that and see where it goes. So when he was traveling, I would stay behind and like I would cook and I would take pictures and post these recipes on my website. And I did that for like a year and a half. And then it just like never really took off. After a year, like I maybe like 200 people would visit the site like every month. So it was like,
What year was this?
This was probably 2016, 2017.
Okay, yeah, that was the start of kind of all the food blogging.
Yeah, that's when like food blogging was major and there was like so many of them.
Right.
So I was like, let me try and like dip my toes into that. But then when he retired, I went back to Chicago and I got a sales job. So when I was doing sales, I didn't really have time to keep up the food blog. So that was kind of like the death of that for the time being.
What was your mindset when you transitioned from, you know, doing something you loved, like being a chef, to going back to sales?
It was, I don't want to say it was hard because I was living at home and I was still cooking on my free time, but I was working so much. It was a door-to-door sales job, but it was a lot of fun, but it was exhausting. So I didn't really have time to like keep up with the blogs, but I was like, okay, I'm making more money than I was. So I just kept on doing it. I did sales for like 2 years before I moved to Texas to work at a family company over here. So I've been everywhere, like all over the
state. So the family company, was that in sales as well?
No. So they had my cousin had a construction company and they were like, we'll pay you more than what you're making in sales. It's an office job. You're sitting in front of a computer. Like, we'll give you all the time off that you want and we're going to pay you more than what you're making here. So I was like, okay, like I'll just go over there, work with them, make more money, save money, and then figure it out from there. And then I moved here to Texas, and then like a couple months later, COVID happened. So that's when everyone started on the internet, on social media.
Okay, so you had completely given up on your food blog at that point, or you were doing
everything? Yeah, at that point, I wasn't really doing anything with the food blog. I was just cooking on my own and like posting pictures on my personal account. Like, oh, like, this is what I made. And like, I was like, eventually, like, I'll work in a food truck or I'll work at a restaurant or like, eventually I'll do something.
Okay. So it was always in the back of your mind.
Yeah, it was always in the back of my head. I'm like, whatever I'm doing now, like, it's just me saving money for the future to see what I do later on. And then what happened, I started TikTok and yeah, that was the start of Fredsters 2.0, I guess.
So what's the meaning behind Fredsters? Was that a nickname?
Yeah, it was a nickname my cousins gave me. So my name's Alfredo. Growing up, everyone called me Freddy. At a young age, they just started calling me Fredsters. And at one point, I hated it. Like, I didn't like the name. It would annoy me. So I think because it annoyed me, they used it more.
That's how it goes, yep.
Yeah, then at one point, kind of like stuck on and like I didn't hate it. Like as I got older, I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. It's a different name. It's a little unique and it stands out. Yeah, I stuck with it.
It's fun. It's a cool name too, especially for food blogging stuff. It's like,
yeah, it's different and I like it now because whenever like I'm out and about and like people are like, oh, you're Fredsters, like it's like super easy for someone to like introduce or like say hi to me or whatever, because they like you remember the name.
Did you ever think of using Alfredo sauce or something?
Growing up, a lot of my usernames on like all these like Twitter and everything, like I would always go as Alfredo sauce.
Yeah, or like fettuccine
Alfredo. Yeah, but I was like, that's a little too Italian, and like people might think I'm Italian.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
when I introduce myself, and if people seem a little confused, I'm like Alfredo, like the sauce.
Yeah.
Like on those accounts, like back in the day, like I would always do Alfredo sauce as my username.
That's funny. Yeah, no, that would definitely read as Italian. So mm-hmm. you made the right decision.
Yeah.
I've chatted with a few private chefs just through my work and stuff, and they always have like some fun mishaps or celebrity anecdotes or anything. Do you have anything like that that you would love to share?
I think like the only one is like when I was with doing the private chef thing, his agent was coming into town for dinner that night. You're like, well, I have you now. So like, we can do dinner here at the house. We went to Whole Foods and like, we got these like super expensive steaks and these super expensive lobster tails. And at the time, I had never made a lobster tail. I had never cooked a lobster tail.
I know.
Like, there I was in the kitchen, like, Googling how to cook a lobster tail. Like, as like, I was doing everything else at the same time. And it was four of us having dinner. Luckily, three out of the four lobster tails came out perfect. One of them was raw. Not fully raw, but, like, you could tell it was a little raw. But I think that's, like, the only one. Like, I'll never forget that.
Once you make the mistake once, it's ingrained in your head.
Yeah, like you'll never forget it.
That's funny. I've actually never made a lobster tail either. Now that it's probably too expensive for me to purchase on my own.
Really? I made one recently because I use a lobster tail in one of the recipes in the cookbook. They're like all different sizes. Like the cheapest ones were like $5 per lobster tail. The most expensive was like $25 per lobster tail. It just depends on the size.
Yeah. So
they can be affordable if you find, like, depending what's available at your store.
Oh, that's good to know. Well, I'm going to the grocery store after this. Yeah. So I will be looking at that in the seafood section.
For sure.
I'd love to know where you were at mentally when you decided to switch from the construction and then just restart your food blog again.
It wasn't like, okay, I'm done with this. Let's start this. It was like a slow transition. Because where I worked with my family at their company, it was a big building and it had a kitchen inside of it. Because we were a small company, there was only like on any given day, like minimum five of us in there. So like when most people were still working from home, like we were still going into the office because like we each had our own space. But I was also using that kitchen in the office to like cook. And I was like cooking for everyone and like kind of
filming it. That's convenient.
I was on TikTok, working, cooking at the same time, doing everything. And then when my TikTok started blowing up and like I started taking it a bit more serious and my family saw that, I never like officially quit. Technically, I'm probably still employed with them because I never quit or anything. And like I just went from like going into the office 5 days a week to going into the office 4 days a week, 3 days, and like eventually I just stopped going.
They were like, where is Alfredo?
Yeah, it went from like me not going at all to like them, they would just give me a phone call like, hey, like we have to do this today. Like, can you remind us how to do it? It was a slow transition, which was kind of cool.
That's funny. Yeah. Not an Irish goodbye, but a slow
one. Yeah. I'll do Irish goodbyes at parties.
Oh yeah, no, me too. The other night I was like, I just need to get out of here, and I'll say my goodbyes and sorrys later.
Here in Texas, people don't use that, but in Chicago we do. And I used it with my friends here in Texas the other day, and they were like, "What is that? You just leave without saying bye."
Yeah, that's so foreign to us because I know if I go to say bye, I'm going to be there for an extra hour.
Exactly.
I'm like, I got to get home and go to bed.
Yeah, I love it.
I get it. So who are your culinary? I just mixed the two words. I was going to say culinary food network heroes growing up. I know you met Rachel Ray at one point.
Rachel Ray is like the biggest one. Like her shows were always on. So like I loved watching her and like cooking like she did. The first cookbook I ever had was one of her cookbooks. So I think a big way of how I cook is how she cooks. Like, she doesn't really measure. She just, like, does whatever she feels like it. So, like, she was one of, like, the early ones. And then, obviously, like, Bobby Flay. When people always tell me, like, what do you want to do in the future? Like, I'm like, I want to be the Mexican version of Bobby Flay. Like,
and you can.
Yeah, like, he's everywhere. So, like, I want to do that. Be like him eventually.
What about Aaron Sanchez?
I love him, too. I've met him at, he was at an event in Chicago. So, I met him there. He's awesome. Like, pretty much anyone from Food Network, I've obsessed over their shows. And then newer, it would be like all like the personalities from like Bon Appetit and like all those like YouTube channels.
Yeah. Molly Ross, my God.
Claire Saffitz, Brad Leone, all of these people. Like when Bon Appetit really took off, I was like, I want to do that. Like I want to do videos on the internet. Like I want to work for a website that only talks about food. Like, that's what I wanted to do, and I made it happen in a way.
You did. Yeah. And you should be proud of that, too, because mm-hmm. it's a lot of people would have given up, you know, but you kind of started and ignited that for yourself.
I think sales helped me not give up, because, like, doing door-to-door sales is hard.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's exhausting. You're getting a lot of doors slammed in your mm-hmm. face. So do you feel like it aided in helping you deal with rejection?
Yeah, sales totally did, because like you said, like door-to-door sales, you got a lot of doors slammed in your face, or like people like you can tell people are inside, they just don't open the door.
So, that's me. I'm always like peeking an eye out.
It helped me a lot, because like doing videos on social media, people expect every single video to go viral and like get a million views, get all these likes, get all these comments, but that's not going to happen. Like, if you have that mentality, like, you're just going to quit because you're not going to see the results you want to see. But because I did door-to-door sales, I was like, not everything I do is going to be a hit, but the more you do it, the better you get at it. So the better you get at it, like, the better results you'll see eventually. So I think that really helped me.
It is. It's like a high mix of skill, but sometimes it's also just timing and mm-hmm. luck. Like, you never know the algorithm or how anything's going to work or what's going to read with people and what's not going to read with people. And then everyone always has a criticism, but then there's so many people that love it, you know? So mm-hmm. it just is, there's so many balls in the air with that. But I know you've had some viral recipes. I saw that Cardi B posted mm-hmm. one. Do you feel like that was the avocado jalapeno dip? And I saw that it launched your platform by like 50,000 followers, which is insane.
Yeah, so like by the time that happened, I already had the following. Like I already had a million followers on TikTok.
Oh, okay.
I already had a couple hundred thousand on Instagram. I think it kind of just like solidified the staying power, where it's like, because of that, people are already going to know your name. And like, where it's like, if you're just starting, like you're trying to prove yourself. But I think when like something like that happened, and like literally to this day, everyone makes a dip. Everyone posts videos about it. Everyone tags her. And everyone in the comments is like, she didn't make it. It was Fredster's dip. Like,
yeah.
I think that's what like kind of like helped me like, or solidified that what I was doing was like what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right, you were on the right path kind of thing. Yeah. Is that recipe in your cookbook?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. It's amazing. One of the cookbook,
so it's a smaller version, because like the initial one, like it made a lot of dip, and like a lot of people would always say like it made dip for like way too many people. Like
That's not a problem for me. So, I'll eat it all. It's fine.
Yeah. So, like this one's like it's the exact same thing, just like a smaller portion.
Okay. Okay.
But, yeah, it's in the book.
Yeah, let's talk about your cookbook now. Let's make it, which I'm obsessed with the cover. I love the bright colors. I think it'll really pop.
Comes out exactly 2 weeks from today from when we're filming this.
Yeah, I'm going to drop this episode 2 weeks from today as well. So
perfect.
Earth Day.
Yeah, Earth Day. A couple people, I think it was my 12-year-old cousin, she mentioned that. She's like, your book is coming out on Earth Day.
She's in tune with sustainability. That's the way it should
be. Yeah, she is. But yeah, it comes out 2 weeks from today. I have like a cookbook collection of like 600 books probably by this point.
Oh, I'm on my way.
I just like love them. Like on any given day, like I'll just pull one out and I'll like look through it. And, like they kind of give me ideas on like what to keep on cooking. Like not exactly the recipe that's in the book, but like, oh, like I haven't used that ingredient in a couple months. Like, let me do something with that or things like that. So like, I just love a good cookbook.
Wait, so I have two questions. Do you have a giant cookbook library?
I have cookbooks all over my house. The biggest shelf. Well, this one has like some of my nicer ones in here.
Okay.
It's like a glass paned bookshelf.
Yeah.
But in my living room, I have like the entire wall is a bookshelf and it's all cookbooks.
Wow, that's my heaven.
So, yeah, they're pretty much everywhere.
Okay, so on a random Tuesday, what are you picking up first? Which cookbook?
Random Tuesday.
Any day, but.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I'll just like go through them and like I have a like I pretty much like have all like the celebrity cookbooks like Rachel Ray, Martha Stewart, like Pamela Anderson just came out with one. So like,
oh, did she? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. She's vegan, so it's a vegan cookbook, but it's a very pretty book. I'll just like go through them and like, oh, like I haven't opened this one in a couple months. Like, let me look through this one.
Mm-hmm. So, amazing. I just talked to Giada De Laurentiis for a story, which is really cool.
I just got her new book.
Oh, is it good? I was going to say, I'm going to try to grab it this week and have her sign it because she'll be at the food festival.
She's awesome. I would love to cook with her. I have more than a couple pasta recipes in the book.
Oh, as you should.
Mexican, American, Italian pastas.
Yeah. So the Alfredo cuts in there somewhere.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
I'd love to. This is like a conversation I've been having with just a lot of content creators lately. I was reading that you got a few offers, but turned them down to make a cookbook. Yeah. The content creators kind of shared the same sentiment that I've been talking with, that they just didn't feel like it was the right fit for them, or they kind of felt pressure to write one at that time, knowing it's not the right fit at that time. How did you know this was the right opportunity for you?
I think I started getting reached out from like multiple like people about writing a cookbook, maybe like as far as 4 years ago.
Wow, yeah.
But it was a lot of those where like it was a self-published type of thing, or like you make the book, you take the photos, and we print it for you online, and people can only buy it online, and like it's only like a set amount of pages, set amount of things, and like I wanted like the full-blown like hardcover book. And I was like, these people that were reaching out, they weren't giving me that option. They're like, no, like, we can only do this. I was like, well, it's going to be a no. I was almost at a point where it was like, maybe I should have said yes to one of those. But then, like, out of the blue, like, Penguin Random House /DK, like, I got an email from my editor. They were like, hey, like, are you interested in writing a cookbook? And I immediately replied, and the conversations took, like, maybe I think they reached out in around like June 2023.
Okay.
And by the end of that year, like we had the contract signed. All of 2024 was spent working on the book.
Wow.
And now we're almost here. When I saw it was one of the big publishers, I was like, okay, like this is the time to do it.
Yeah, that's incredible. There's just something different, especially as just a Food Network fanatic or someone who's an avid fan of cookbooks, or something different about having something tangible in your hand that you can say, I worked on this. Because when you see it online, it's just like sometimes not as gratifying.
Yeah. Like, I had so many opportunities to do like ebooks, but like even me, like when I get an ebook, like especially if it's a cookbook, I'll look at it the first day and then I never go to it again.
Right.
Like it's easier to have like a physical thing.
It is. I know. I honestly look at online recipes all the time, but then I have to keep tapping my computer while I'm cooking, and it just is versus having the cookbook open. I'm using Michael Simon's right now, so that's my favorite one. So you have traditional Mexican recipes in the book, but with an American sort of twist. Was there ever a flavor combination where you went, okay, this might actually not work, but then it did and surprised you?
Yeah, I think one of the ones that like I never considered using kimchi and like mm-hmm. something Mexican.
Yeah, that's but interesting.
I was like trying to come up with the recipes. I was like, I don't want to do just like a regular pico de gallo because it's like super simple. Like everyone does it different. And I had a jar of kimchi in the fridge, and I was like, what if I chop up the kimchi and like mix it into the pico de gallo? And yeah. I don't know why I never thought of doing it before, because it just naturally it worked together, because the kimchi is like a little, it's a little spicy and like it's fermented, and like pico de gallo, it's like a lot of, it's very tart with the lime and everything in there. So it kind of just like worked perfectly together, and like I kind of like it more over just like a regular pico de gallo because it gives it more depth of flavor.
Right, right. It's a little mm-hmm. bit more contrasting with the fermentation yeah. process of it. What's a recipe in the book that people may breeze over or look over, but you wish they wouldn't?
Probably some of like the ones that are like have a long ingredient list. There's probably a couple of those, maybe like around 5 or 6, where it's like the ingredient list is a whole lot longer. Just because it's long doesn't mean it's hard. It's just like if you prepare everything ahead of time and you measure everything out, the cooking process is like so easy. So I think it's some of those that like might intimidate people, but they're all super easy because like I'm not a professionally trained cook. Like I feel like I cook the way an everyday home cook would cook at home.
Yeah. And that's what people like to see too. I mean, yeah. I can't say I've not skipped over some ones that had long ingredients, but yeah. that's more my lack of going to the grocery store and laziness. Totally. Anything else mm-hmm. because I never look through like the recipe process really. I just like
the ingredient list.
Yeah, I just look at the ingredients.
Yeah, so like I mean that's also the thing about cookbooks, it's like they're not, I mean in a way they're meant for you to follow the recipe like to a T, mm-hmm. but if you're someone that like you would say you're kind of an experienced home cook and like you cook at home every day and like let's say you've always made a chicken parmesan and this cookbook has a recipe for a chicken parmesan, but they do something differently or like they make the sauce different. Like you already know the process, how to make it from start to finish. You're just using different ingredients to do that. So it's kind of like a guide in a way to like, oh, like I've made this before, but I've never added this ingredient. Like, let me add that ingredient. Like, it still kind of gives you the same thing, but that's how I use cookbooks. Like, I rarely follow them to a T. It's like, it gives me inspiration. Like, okay, like, I can do that, but slightly different or, like, with different ingredients and stuff like that.
Right. And, like, cookbooks, you have more leeway with that. Baking is definitely a little different. Mm-hmm. But tell me a little bit more about the process of doing the cookbook. You know, it's a mm-hmm. grueling process. Yeah. It takes about a year. Was there any point where you were like, oh, this is not going to work out, this is not what I wanted, or mm-hmm. were you excited? What were your feelings?
Yeah, I think all of 2024 is like mostly the book. I remember February of last year, every single day I was cooking all of the recipes for the book. Like I was doing anywhere from like four to five recipes a day.
Wow. So
like for a whole month, my fridge was stuffed with food and like my family kept on coming over to take all the food and try it all out. I think that was the most fun writing it, that and the photo shoot.
Oh.
But they were also like the most exhausting because like it required a lot of cleaning and like being on your feet 24/7. I think the entire process was a lot of fun, but it was also very exhausting. And like obviously the writing part aspect of it like is what I waited to do like the very last minute. But I think now that I've done it and the book is basically here, like I would love to do more books, but now I think I'll be better at writing a second cookbook and a third cookbook because now, right. now I know what to expect. Like this is the first one and like no one in school ever teaches you how to write a book unless you're like going yeah. for writing and stuff like that. And like, but no one teaches you how to write a cookbook. So I think, like, if I get the chance to do a second one, it's going to be, like, this one's great, but the second one's going to be a million times better.
Right. And the first time you do anything, it's going to be the slowest process, yeah. and then you would pick it up.
Totally.
I know the women in your family are a big inspiration for you. How do they feel about this cookbook coming out?
My mom cries all the time when she thinks about it. And then like I'll call her and like I'll say like, oh, I'm doing this because of the book, and like she immediately starts crying. But like everyone loves it, and like they tell everyone about it. It's like I'm super excited, and everyone like they can go into a store and like they'll be able to see my book there, and like that's still crazy to me. Like it still feels like it's not happening. Like it'll feel like it happened when I can walk into Barnes and Noble and like see my book like on the shelf.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, everyone's excited about it.
I know how you feel. I'm like, that's my goal too. I just want to walk. I love Barnes and Noble. It's my safe space. I want to walk in, see my name on something.
I know. And it's almost here.
It is. It is almost here. Did you feel, because you're first generation, I've talked to a few people who kind of share the sentiment that maybe they felt pressure to be a little bit more successful. Mm-hmm. Is that something that kind of weighed on your shoulders?
Yeah, and I think so. I think that's always in the back of someone's head, just because like it's something that like I didn't grow up thinking I would do. So now that like I have the opportunity to do it, it's like, okay, like it has to be perfect, but like nothing's ever perfect. Like, especially with cooking, like I'll do recipes where I make it one way, and then like in a couple months, I'm like, why did I do it like that? Like, I should have done it like this. Like, I'm sure that's already the case with some of the recipes in this book. Like, I'll look at it, I'm like, oh, like I could have added something else, or I could have done something differently. So, because cooking is always evolving. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that tangent, but.
Well, that's just the creative process too, right? Mm-hmm. It's like as creatives, we're always thinking of the next thing that we could do, and things are always changing, especially I'm in the media landscape. So I'm like, oh, I wish I wrote that differently, or I wish I did this. And then we're also perfectionists at our craft. Totally. So we're kind of battling those two things together. And it's like, when it's finally in print, it's like, oh, you can't change it.
I know.
It's done. Well, how do you feel now that it's coming in at 2 weeks? Are you excited? Are you nervous? Are your fans or your followers excited?
Yeah, I announced the book tour last week, and a lot of people are super excited about it. And a lot of people started messaging me like, hey, like my sister wants to bring you this, or like, hey, can we go out to lunch or dinner? Like, I wasn't expecting people to like be that excited about it. So like, I'm super excited to go. I know it's going to be exhausting, but I'm excited to go to all these cities and like meet all these people that have like allowed me to write this cookbook, because without them it wouldn't have happened. So I'm super excited. I've gotten a couple of opportunities to like promote the book in a way I wouldn't have thought I'd be able to. Some I don't know if I can say it yet. One of them I'm super excited about. Like I called my mom and she's like, who is that? So I'm excited for all the traveling that's coming up because of the book. And for everyone to finally see the book, because I feel like at this point I've been talking about it for like 2 or 3 years. So it's almost to the point where like it'll be something physical that people can have.
Yeah, it's almost a little unbelievable too, right? It's like a figment of your imagination. And then all of a sudden you're making television appearances and like, oh, shoot, I'm on TV.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is. Well, next, you'll get a Food Network contract or something. Would you ever do a competition show?
I've been asked to apply to MasterChef a couple of years ago. And I applied, and like their hiring or interview process was like very hectic. Like one of the nights, like I was up almost all night filming all these cooking videos that they wanted me to film, but they never ultimately picked me. And then they asked me again at a different time, but it was like a duos season. I was like, no, like I want to be able to do it myself. I want to do a TV show so badly. Like even if it's one episode of Chopped, So like
just be in the background, just out, like doing a blender or something.
Like let me turn on the blender for someone. But I would love, and I know I get nervous easily, and like my face turns like a tomato. But like,
yeah,
I want to get that opportunity to like experience TV. Maybe I suck at it and then I never do it again, but maybe it works out. So hopefully,
but then at least,
hopefully that's in the future.
I think it will be. Once your cookbook, all that whirlwind stuff dies down, then you go on your vacation, you take a break, and then I'm sure you'll get a few messages and phone calls.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
We kind of already did this, but I always ask my guests to talk about what's next for them. So you have your cookbook, you have your book tour.
Yeah.
We kind of already talked that you want to continue making more cookbooks. Is there anything else you'd like to share or anything else going on that you're excited
anything
about?
Else going on? Not really. I mean, I'm obviously always making content, and like content's not going to stop for now, but I am always thinking about the next thing. Like, I've considered starting like a newsletter and like go more in depth with recipes and stuff like that, or like share things that aren't recipes. And like, I love food, but like I also love watching movies and going to the movies. So like,
oh, fun.
Doing something like, I've always been like so against like doing multiple accounts for like different things on social media.
Oh, I have like four, so you're fine.
So, like, I've talked to friends like, oh, you should make an account where like you just talk about movies and TV shows. But I wish I could just do it all in one and like not have to make multiple accounts.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, like I just want to keep doing everything and like seeing what opportunities come up. And like, I low key have already started working on recipes for a second cookbook.
Oh, whoa, you're grinding.
So now I just need to like hope this one is successful so that I get the opportunity to actually write the second one.
It will be. I think you've already had so much buzz about it and it's just, it already looks like an incredible piece of work. So I'm sure.
Thank you.
And everyone loves Mexican-American food.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go wrong.
No, I'm hungry just talking about it.
No, me too. I told you right before this, I didn't eat lunch yet. So
I had
like,
breakfast, and then I had like a mini beef jerky stick before we started. So it's time for food already.
It is. I'm like, it's so funny. The people that cook the most barely cook for themselves sometimes. I love it. All right. So I'm going to end the podcast with one question that I ask every single guest. Mm-hmm. If there is one cooking utensil or appliance that you think everyone should splurge on, what would it be and why?
Mine would have to be my Vitamix.
Oh, okay.
Because I've had it for like 6 or 7 years now. And like it still works brand new. But specifically, like usually a Vitamix comes with the plastic container, but they also sell a stainless steel container for it. So it looks different than the average Vitamix. And everyone always asks me when I use it, like, what blender are you using? Because they're not used to seeing it. But because I make a lot of salsas and, like, usually, like, eventually over time, like, that smell and, like, the color of the plastic one is going to change. But this stainless steel one is perfect for, like, all your savory cooking. So like, I only use a plastic one for smoothies and stuff like that, and the stainless steel for all the salsa and spicy stuff that I make.
Oh, amazing. And your salsa brand, right? You have
Salsa Macha
as well. Yeah, I was looking at that. Would you come out with a few more?
Yeah, I'm so bad. I've been teasing a spicier one for the longest.
Are people getting mad at you?
Yeah, like people ask me all the time, like, when is it coming? When is it coming? I'm like, just give me a little bit of time. But I'm hoping to do that this year. Like, yeah, it needs to happen. But I have a couple other ideas for that. So I need to get the ball rolling on it now that the cookbook is pretty much done with.
Well, bask in the glory of your book tour and all that. Then worry
then
about it.
Get back to work.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the grind never stops when you work for yourself,
it never
right?
stops.
I know the pain. I know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for this. This is a wonderful, wonderful conversation.
You.
And you're going to be in LA for the
tour,
right?
I'll be there a whole week, actually, filming other things. I'm going back to the TV thing. Something crazy happened, and I'm probably filming with someone a recipe from the book. Like at their house, like that they're on a TV show.
Oh.
So I'm like freaking out. Like, what if someone else from the show is there? But that happened, but I'll be at Smorgasbord in LA on Sunday, May 4th. It's like their big Cinco de Mayo celebration. So I'll be there signing books. And the cool thing is there's going to be three of the vendors are going to be making recipes from the book that people can buy to try.
And the avocado dip,
the one that Cardi B made. So that'll be a lot of fun. Amazing.
Wait, I'll have to come. I think I'll be around. Yeah. But if I can't come to Smorgasbord, we should definitely get together.
I'll be there the week, so we have time.
That hectic week of yours, sure. But I'm here in West Hollywood. Awesome. Amazing. So you can keep up with Alfredo on Instagram at Fredsters, FREDDSTRS. I almost felt like I was spelling it wrong. Or on his website, www.shopfredsters.com. Mm-hmm.
Hey, fellow foodies. Thanks so much for listening. And don't forget to leave me a review. While you're at it, make sure to follow me at livinforfoodpod on Instagram or TikTok, or email me at livinforfoodpod@gmail.com. Let me know what you're cooking up this week, which guests you would like to see on the podcast, or tell me your opinions on the latest viral food trend. And in case you're just joining me, there is an entirety of season 1 ready and waiting for you. Until next time.